Radio 100,7. Kultur um 5. Mam Pit Fante.
Einen schönen guten Mittag, schön, dass ihr mit dabei seid, heute bei uns am Kulturmagazin ob diesem Freitag. Und du geht es direkt ob Kunstbiennale zu Venedig. Denn letzte Bayer Pavillon do an der Salle d'Armie vom Arsenal, ist das hier nicht nur, immens international abgestellt, mit mich zu direkt sein, pur mal regelmäßig zu gucken zu gehen, weil von April bis September vier Künstler, Künstlerinnen am Pavillon Residenzen haben. Während des Residenzen experimentieren sie mit einer Soundbibliothek, zusammengestellt als ich eine Klang, aber auch als denen von den drei anderen Künstler und Künstlerinnen. Dodo stellen sie das Resultat am Kader von einer Performance vier. Und du lässt du mal direkt ein bisschen bis ran.
Next to your left ear, the one closer to your heart. Heart to heart, a land on your head, my toes grab you by the tail. And then, all down, my beak will insert itself into one of the folds. Peck, peck, peck into your ear. And then, yearning for your earlobe, I'll glide down to your shoulder.
Was wir hier gerade hören, am anderen Grund. Da das ein Extra aus der Performance von der türkischen Künstlerin Celine Davas an den Jeff Schinker war zu Venedig, an heute stand du mit der Künstlerin in der Halle.
You're the first, the very first performer here in the Luxembourgish Pavilion. What did that do to approaching it, being the first one, not having anything to compare to? Was that more refreshing? Was there less pressure or more pressure?
Each new space I go to, I kind of try to adapt my performance. Mm-hmm. But of course, while the space was being built, it's difficult to kind of anticipate what's going to happen and then plan for that. And when I came here, there were many surprises that I hadn't anticipated, that the aluminium floors paint the dresses, and I had to, find solutions. And also, I think when I first entered the space, I was breathless. It was just so beautiful, and suddenly my mind was turning, and I was thinking of all the possibilities. That was, I think it's a challenge, but also kind of a privilege to be able to, do this.
You had the residency here, and so you were working here with different soundscapes. Also, if I understood that widely, soundscapes from other composers, from the other ones, there was a library. How did that affect your way of working, performing, creating, being able to work with the sounds of that others created?
It was really exciting because also as a performance artist with a text-based practice, I don't usually I think of voice and beats and rhythm and sometimes, the sound of language, but I don't really think of sound as my practice. And while, contributing to the library, I did mostly text-based stuff, and then listening to other people's libraries, how playful they went, how random they went, or those kind of things. It was really great. I was writing parts of the script, going back to the library, listening to something, thinking when these things could come. But in the end, I worked with a composer called Alexander Yetsi, because I think to activate this space with the glass panels and the vibrating floors and stuff, you need to really, have an understanding, a true sound artist. And he kind of really made it come alive. And then we kind of, listened to the library and then used some things, but they were all processed. So, some of the beats, underneath the chants and the floors, were actually just sounds from the library. But when the pitch was so reduced, it became a rhythm. And we were wondering if the other artists, when they come tomorrow, will they be able to hear their own things because they have been so processed. But it's really exciting, this idea of contamination and collaboration through great distances and people who haven't met before, and I'm also excited to see what other people are gonna do.
Yes. Yeah, you were talking about that your work is text-based, so what is there first? Is there the idea, the fictional universe you're creating in this interior monologue with different parts? Do you adapt to the sounds? There were some parts of your performance that is very rhythmical, that could have been electronic avant-garde songs by Peaches or Shushu and artists like that,
I think I first start with the animals, you know, like the concept of the animals. And my kind of process was that I was trying to translate the rhythm of the animals, you know, or kind of this, the animality into the text and the speech. Pigeons walk in circles. It feels like they don't know where they're going. It feels like they repeat certain movements and sometimes they just change their minds. Things don't always make sense. And so I kind of wanted to have this circular, like the cyclical thinking and these like flights of ideas, like random ideas and mood change. You know, pigeons mood change super fast. And then with horses, it's difficult to capture or kind of embody the dignity of such a, you know, like grand, impressive, majestic animal. And I was thinking, you know, like speed and strength are the qualities that we, you know, associate with this animal. And how can I embody that? And I thought, like, through this auctioneer chance of like speaking super, super fast, at some point, speech turns into sound that's illegible. And I had done like a version of the horse performance before, and there was no sound. It was more like speech was sometimes getting so fast that it was turning into, yeah, like an auctioneer chant. But here, because, you know, like there's all this potential of the space that should be activated, it turned into more of the, like you said, like this, you know, avant-garde rap-ish kind of thing. It's fun. It kind of gives me also like a metronome. But, you know, doing the performance, like I did it 8 times today, it feels like at some point, you know, I wasn't even perceiving the beats. Like my mind was doing its own thing. And yeah, it's like crazy, this alienation that suddenly comes, you know.
Doing it 8 times a day must be, yeah, it sometimes becomes like a different kind of thing. And I wonder if there's still like, if your perception of the text changes when you first do it at 11 in the morning to when you last finally do it at 6.
I've done performances like this, like repetitive performances before, but here there's also a different attention span, you know. I think as long as people are watching, there are people paying attention, that is interesting for me because I want to kind of, you know, like communicate with them. But when people are watching and leaving, or there are not so many people in the room or something, then I'm in autopilot. And then I'm kind of thinking like, oh, did I skip that paragraph? Like, you know, did I do it in the previous time and not do it in this one? And I kind of have these things. But I think as long as I kind of stay with the animal, because, you know, when I'm performing, I'm thinking like I'm really a pigeon, you know, I'm a pigeon, I'm not a human trying to be a pigeon, like I'm a horse. So when I kind of go back to that, then it becomes fun, or kind of I'm present. But also it's nice to have people paying attention. And I think my relationship to the text changed in the way that like it became so well known to me that I started doubting it. It feels like, oh my god, like people aren't getting it, you know, like maybe I'm forgetting something, maybe it doesn't make so much sense. Sometimes if you look at something so intensely, it kind of loses its meaning or something.
The band The National once played their song Sorrow for 6 or 8 hours in a row in a museum, and then also like at some point it loses its initial meaning, I guess. Yeah, what I found very interesting in the text is like that you have the animality, you have capitalism critics when you say like I'm a commodity sold many times, and you have dealing with phallocracy, and there's also like the performance need of the Western civilization. I'm only as good as my last performance. So what I really enjoyed is like that you have like all these different ideas that fly around, and they get kind of structured by the incarnation into an animal. So yeah, how do you get structure into this kind of texts and thoughts and ideas? And yeah, is there a threat?
The threat was like domesticated animals, that, you know, these animals that have somehow been so changed by human intervention. At first, I wanted to resist treating these animals as symbols because, you know, there's like a similarity in gesture when you employ animals as, you know, just like commodities or kind of like workers, or when you employ animals as symbols. And then I was kind of thinking of how animals have world-building powers that we don't give them enough credit for. You know, Western civilization owes a lot to horses, or like, you know, pigeons have like influenced city architecture all around the world, you know, because we build bird spikes and stuff. And, you know, pigeons also have worked in wars or something like that as messengers. And, you know, silkworms are also, we all have silk things, they're amazing, and mice with all the medication that we use. In the end, when I was trying to stay too literally with the animals and just avoid everything metaphorical, it became a little bit vulgar, you know, or like a little bit too comical. Then I went back to the symbols, but I was also trying to just focus on language. You know how I raised silkworms as research for this performance, you know, I bought eggs and, you know, it feels like all they care about is mulberry leaves. Like that's their whole world. So I thought, you know, the silkworm monologue has to be about mulberry leaves. But then I kind of relate to this monologue because of this, you know, this greed that when you want something, like your cavity wants and then your body goes toward. And so I was thinking, oh, like, that's interesting. But it was, I didn't want to, like, make, like, a whole narrative, like, the pigeon where I talk about the silkworm because it becomes too humanizing. And the mouse, I wanted to focus on the lab mouse. And I wanted this text with, like, a lot of removals, like, things taken away from it. At this point, you know, I had many horses. All the horses are actually like different horses. You know, one is a jaded workhorse. The other is kind of like an ambitious show horse. And the pigeons are also all different. But I had like, you know, 7 horses, 6 pigeons, like so many different. But I had to shorten it because of the attention span here. And at this point, you know, I know what I intended, you know, preparation. But this final performance that came alive, it's also, you know, I think it took a life of its own. And maybe it's not... Not everything is super self-explanatory. I see it now as an exercise in trusting the audience and trusting the audience's, you know, like kind of generosity or investment in the thing. Because, yeah, it's a bit maybe difficult to follow in some ways.
As you say, you had to probably also shorten it because you couldn't have done 1 hour and then in 8 times a day. And also the attention span is different here. But also like the people, like even if they don't grasp everything, people can feel that you are the animal. And so it's got this organic and sensual dimension also that I think people will grasp anyway.
I think also the, you know, how the silkworm kind of is merging with the floor and the mouse is in a cage and, you know, searching for a way out, looking outside the glass, it also became a way to interact with the architecture in a way that a human, like, you know, like human performance couldn't. Every performance is different. It feels like, you know, depending on the audience, how it's perceived is really different. I was kind of thinking, like, the change from animal to animal is something interesting, and I wanted people to really see that, but sometimes they don't. But yeah, like you said, you know, there's like this super non-organic space and then like an organic performance that is kind of, you know, like tongue-in-cheek. So there's like a contrast that people will see.
What I found interesting about this project, usually like in the past, most of the times Luxembourgish Pavilion has been about featuring one artist from Luxembourg, and then it's that for me to, I think, to very first time that it's really like an open experiment where the idea is also to break with nationalities and also with just the Western civilization. So do you see that as well?
Yeah, I actually think it's like really interesting to have like a national pavilion that has, you know, so many like other nationalities here. And you said, you know, there's this critique of like the Venice Biennale as the gardens of the white male and, you know, like all these things. So it's nice to have something that is horizontal and contaminated and super kind of open and, you know, also kind of malleable. Like there are things I think the project will be changing throughout a lot. These things should happen more, you know, but I think they are also happening more and more now. Yeah.
Seht Céline Davas zu ihrer Performance am Letzebauer Pavillon auf der Kunstbiennale zu Venedig. Am Lauf von der nächsten Main fährt mich dann auch noch halt da bestimmt von den 3 anderen Künstler, Künstlerinnen, 4 Stellen, die dann du auch ein Residenz an dem Pavillon haben.